Hello and welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter Lavelle. Here we discuss some real news. For all intents and purposes, Israel has been indicted on the charge of genocide by the world's highest court. Is this a game changer? Has Israel lost its long-held impunity? Also, the establishment's lawfare campaign against Donald Trump continues. Will America's democracy be destroyed in the process? And I'm joined by my usual guests, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And in Marrakesh, we have Martin Jay. He is an award-winning journalist. Our gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick it off with George in Budapest. We've had a few days to digest the court's decision to bring genocide charges against Israel, sponsored by South Africa. And there's been a lot of talk about the significance of it, particularly since a ceasefire wasn't actually called for. However, given the six stipulations, it essentially is a call for a ceasefire. And since we've had a few days to digest it, nothing has really changed in terms of Israel's behavior in Gaza. George, your initial thoughts?
Well, I think those are my initial thoughts. There's been almost no change in Israel. What was striking was that within hours of the issuance of these provisional measures, Israel announced that the UNRWA personnel had been involved in the October the 7th attacks. The United States immediately echoed this and said, yes, well, this is shocking, horrific, and said, we're not funding the UNRWA anymore. And now a number of other countries, the usual suspects, the UK, Australia, Canada, say, oh, well, it's terrible, we're not funding it. The subject has been changed. And that was the thing, it was always an interesting question. What was Israel going to do to change the subject? Well, this was it. And if you look at the media now, they're talking about this horrific UN agency involved in an armed attack. This is terrible. The Western media coverage has also been minimal, given that this is a historic ruling. I mean, many people thought that the World Court would just give it a pass, but this was quite serious, and the majorities were so overwhelming.
An
Israeli judge voted for some of the provisional measures. And so you have to say that this is a historic ruling, very damaging to Israel, and in terms of its public reputation. And Israel and Israel allies have done exactly what you would expect. They've changed the subject.
Well, Martin, the claims against the UNRWA officials, employees collaborating with Hamas on October 7th, these are alleged from interviews/possibly torture of Hamas fighters or people that left Gaza on that day. That follow-up isn't often mentioned, if at all, where they got this information from. This is very much in line with the eyewitnesses of systematic rape. So we need to learn more about it. But George is absolutely right. Insult to injury. Now we're just going to cut all of the funding here. This adds to the intentionality of what these proceedings are all about, the intent to commit genocide, and then you cut off the aid here. So another significant thing for me is that the court decided that it has jurisdiction, which is extremely important in this case here. Martin, your thoughts?
I'm actually really disappointed in the case. I said earlier on that I thought it would be fudged. And is it a deal breaker? You could say it is a deal breaker on many levels. It'll have impact all around the world on how we look at conflict and how we judge even America, and whether we even believe in an international criminal court in itself. But when we specifically talk about Israel, I'm not sure it will be a deal breaker. I'm not sure there will be a huge amount of impact. I mean, the word genocide was specifically not used in the judgment. And I think America will seize on that. And I think we can expect a veto at the United Nations Security Council vote in the coming days. And, there will be other stunts in the line to direct media away from this case, to try and diffuse it, to try and put it far away as possible. Many media analysts, supposedly in Washington and in Israel, will be saying, it'll take time, but this will pass. But I'm not sure it will in terms of Israel's reputation around the world. And we talk about even trade. you know, how is Israel going to actually continue trading with countries when it has this hanging over it? Do other countries now take the initiative of using this as a basis for more legal cases independently? Ireland, perhaps, Saudi Arabia, they've talked about this in the past. You know, are countries like Britain, who have supplied the Israelis with military equipment, are we now implicit in this? You know, there's a lot of questions being thrown.
Well, but Martin, I think that's the key here. I'll go back to George here, the complicity. I think that all of us agree that Israel is just going to ignore this. And, you know, South Africa's, you know, Hamas's lawyer, and, you know, South Africa's anti-Semitic, the usual smears. It doesn't impress anybody anymore. But, you know, the UK, the United States, you know, aiding and abetting, openly aiding and abetting, which is at least, at the very least, indirectly countering what the court has demanded of Israel. So, you know, the stench of genocide goes far afield, and the United States is going to feel that, and it's turning into a domestic issue as well. I think it is a very big deal. I think it's a game changer in many, many ways. The country in the 21st century that is being charged by the highest court in the world of genocide is Israel. That in itself is a game changer, George.
I agree. I think that that part of it is a game changer, because the Genocide Convention came into being precisely in response to what was done to the Jews in World War II. And then for Israel then to be found, as I said, not guilty of genocide, but nonetheless, I mean, there was enough there, which is what the judge has said. There is enough going on here, enough what South Africa has said, that is to persuade us that Israel needs to cease and desist from genocidal acts. And more seriously, Israeli officials who make remarks that can be seen to be incendiary and triggering a genocide must be held to account. They must be punished. So those are indeed big deals. And you already have the Biden administration that is so complicit in Israel's actions that it's paying the price. I mean, it just can't get out of it. And the polls suggest that among young people, there's a majority who believes that Israel is committing genocide, and that the Biden administration is helping Israel to do this. And you know, this is quite extraordinary that these are Biden supporters. And so at the very minimum, Biden is going to pay a price. We'll talk about this later. Biden thinks, oh, well, we'll change the election. It'll be about Trump. I'm not sure that's going to work because they've got this. There's a world court ruling. You know, you can't just simply turn around and say, oh, well, we won't talk about that. Let's just talk about Trump. So I think it is going to have, at the very minimum, a major impact in the United States.
And all the more so, George, that it's so many more things can happen between now and then. It looks very more and more likely that the conflict will expand into Lebanon against Hezbollah. It looking that way, that Martin was prescient about that a few weeks ago. But looking at the region, Martin, it's very interesting. It's in a way, when you look at the court's provisional rulings, Yemen is being justified in its actions because it is a signatory of the Genocide Convention, and it is doing everything in its power to stop it. And that's, you know, that's what Yemen is doing. It's taking the lead in many ways. I know that Western media, they're just terrorists, all this. Again, I don't think this sticks anymore. I don't think people are going along with it, particularly when you can watch things in real time. So there's a lot of moving pieces here, but these provisional decisions here, the impact is going to ricochet all over the place. Martin.
Yeah, and you can see what Western media are trying to do is to reduce that impact, you know, as best they can. The reference to UNRWA was interesting. I worked with UNRWA quite a bit in Lebanon in the Palestinian refugee camps, and the idea that they are complicit somehow in this October 7th is preposterous, absolutely preposterous. You know, I mean, the link that the Israelis might have found, you know, is probably very, very tenuous and very dubious. But the timing of it is interesting, isn't it?
You know, well, I'm sorry, Martin. Do you think we're ever going to be presented with facts? I mean, forensic facts?
Who
I mean,
needs them?
Recordings, who needs interviews?
Who needs them? I mean,
no, the claim is made. That's all that is necessary. That's all that's necessary.
Yeah, and all you have to do is look at the BBC coverage. You know, shamefully, they had an 8-minute report on this UNRWA allegation, and only ran a couple of minutes on the ICJ ruling. So that gives you the, you know, I mean, there was a lot of hue and cry from people in the UK about that and on social media. So that gives you an idea of, you know, where we're going with this. But again, you know, it's interesting, the impact on social media is extraordinary. Social media is leading. Yeah. So, you know, this is where, you know, millions of people around the world are really tuning in and being grown up about this and actually seeing the salient facts for what they are. But I have a feeling that, you know, this is we're going to see a lot more of this. And Israel is digging itself deeper and deeper and deeper into a hole. And I've said at the beginning of the conflict, from October the 7th, I've written, when this is over, I don't think the Israel that we know today will exist. I think a new Israel will have to emerge.
Well, that's an interesting thought, Martin, because, George, how Israel will change, it's open right now, because there's so many possibilities of this conflict, the way it will move in one direction or another. But it will be how the relationship that the United States has with Israel and how the world sees that relationship. I think that's really key, George.
It is key. And the problem that I think Israel is going to have is that it will not succeed in this enterprise, right. The whole enterprise, which is to destroy Hamas. So therefore, this horrific killing, this total destruction, this, you know, which again, you know, it's in the ICJ ruling. They list all the terrible things that have been done. They will be for naught. You have not achieved anything. And then it's hard to see how we can just sort of pretend that, well, this, you know, fine, well, we'll just move on, go on to the next negotiations. Or, you know, well, we, you know, fine, we won't have BB anymore, we'll have somebody else, and then, you know, we'll have a next peace plan and the next
that I think, George, you're right, that's going to be the next diversion. That if you get rid of BB, then it's a game changer. You know, no, it won't be, it won't be whatsoever. Okay, it'll be just ways to distract from what we've been watching play out on the ground. 10 seconds, Martin, before we go to the break.
I have to disagree. I think if BB goes, then I think that will generate a whole new debate, both within Israel and around the world, as to what the steps Israel could take before accepting the American plan of having a two-state solution, which is governed by...
I don't see anybody in Israeli leadership willing to accept that. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter Lavelle Trumanji. We're discussing some real news. Okay, George, I want to go to you. Kind of a variation on the theme of what we talked about with the genocide case against Israel and establishment. And the establishment in the United States is really revving up the engine there to derail Donald Trump's presidential bid, but through lawfare, not through the ballot box. It's lawfare. And we have this defamation case that came through, absurd on the face of it. I don't want to go into the details. I don't want to waste our time on it. But, you know, a punitive cost that is going to be making Trump pay, $82 million. Yeah. Something like that. Okay. I mean, and, you know, we went through this before, but this is just the beginning. This is the first domino to go, George.
It is the first domino because, as we were discussing in the first half, the Biden administration is at historic lows. I mean, its poll numbers are just, you know, through the floor. It's horrific. And clearly, it only has one strategy, which is let's make this election about Donald Trump, preferably if we can just simply get rid of him. You know, one way or another, we can just kick him off the ballot or just put him in prison. That's even better. And so this was the...
And plus, they have Nikki Haley in the wings, right?
Exactly, have Nikki Haley in the wings. So now you have this absolutely absurd decision. This, you know, this obviously mentally deranged woman making up stories. She didn't do something, something or other happened 30 years ago. She doesn't know when it happened. She didn't report it at the time or anything else. And now I think, you know, may well be next week, but certainly in the coming days, New York State will deem that the Trump Organization committed fraud and will hit him with something like a $400 million fine, again, with the goal of bankrupting him so that he doesn't have any cash at all. And then, of course, we have all of the criminal cases. We've got no less than four criminal cases that are being brought. This is really quite extraordinary. I mean, it's never happened in any democratic state that you're bringing in all this against a person, a particular person who's the leading political opponent. And that is just a reflection of just how desperate the situation of the political establishment is. That formula, well, let's just simply call Trump a fascist and a racist and be done with it, and we'll win the election. They know that isn't going to work, so they really have to go in for some rough stuff now.
Rough stuff, yeah. I mean, and I think everything is on the table. I think everybody knows what I mean, too. But Martin, this is the most fundamentally anti-democratic approach you could ever imagine, okay? They're in the name of democracy, they're subverting democracy. I think there should be a trial. I think there should be a jury. It's called the American people and the ballot. That's where you have the trial in public with paper ballots, hopefully. Go ahead, Martin.
Well, the problem with that, and the polls are indicating that fewer and fewer Americans now have confidence in the whole system. You know, what yep. George called the formula. You know, I mean, a recent poll said as much as 18% of voters wouldn't bother turning up to vote. Neither candidate might be too worried about that. But for the Biden camp to put all their eggs in one basket and apparently, you know, are jubilant that Trump is now going to be the candidate, I find that odd. But for them to do that, I think that puts them on a losing strategy, because this formula that George mentioned, you know, it's how do you sum it up? It's we go to the polls and we don't vote for our candidate. We vote for a protest vote to oust the other candidate. You know, and it started probably arguably with Hillary and Trump. And that was a turning point in American politics for me. But now we're continuing the same theme. And a lot of people who are going to vote for Trump this time, I think, will be swing voters who are tired of Biden, who may have traditionally voted in the Democratic camps. I think there's a number of key states where Biden's going to lose because he's lost the Jewish vote, he's lost the Muslim vote, he's lost the young person's vote. And now he thinks the way to do this is to put everything into the black vote. So he's going for the black votes, you know, and he started off in South Carolina, where arguably, which installed him the first time round. But when we talk about getting nasty, you know, on the Trump side, he's got so much more now to throw at Biden than he did against Hillary Clinton. And there's a whole list of things which we haven't got time to go to, but let's just go to the top one, the economy. You know, the Bidenomics, I can't even say it, you know, help me out here. What is that? What it means is, on paper, we may be doing quite well with the economy. Our elites are doing well. You know, all of our friends.
Yes, it depends on who. Yes, exactly.
All our friends at the country club are buying themselves new Jags, you know, and new Learjets. But that hasn't trickled down. The trickle-down effect in this great economy hasn't worked. And many, many Americans, humble Americans who don't understand too much about economics and politics, they decide about economics by gas pump prices and what they pay at the supermarket. And Biden's record on both of those is really bad. So he's got a real problem there, you know. But again, Trump, every time we come on our show here and we talk about Trump's cases, every single time, without fail, his popularity rises each time. And it's interesting that now he, if you notice with his speeches, he is more and more referring now to the legal system, to the judiciary system in America. And I think that complaint, the more he gets hit, the more he takes the podium and talks about how bad the legal system is and how much need there is in America for reform of the judiciary, I think that resonates more and more and more.
Well, what I think does resonate, George, is that if they can do this to Donald Trump, and I think this is the subliminal message that people get, if they can do it to him, you know, with lawfare, they can do it to anyone. I mean, Donald Trump has deep pockets, okay? Very deep pockets compared to the average person, obviously. And I think this is what is so disturbing is that, you know, it's not even if you like Trump or not, because I don't think that's part of the equation for the vast majority of people. We know who he is. That's what's most important. We know who he is, okay? He wasn't a dictator in office. He didn't do the things that they claim that he will do if he returns. But just this... Look, all three of us are basically intelligent people, but when I look at these cases, George, I scratch my head. I don't understand how they what they're getting at, and I think that is that's what people are taking on. This is just the con. I mean, this doesn't make any sense.
George got it. George said money. It's about money.
Yeah, no, that's right. And then when you think about this, if you go back to, let's say, America in 1984. In 1984, Americans had faith in their system. They thought, well, yeah, we got the FBI, we have the CIA, Pentagon. They're all basically doing a good job. You know, they're all doing whatever they can in order to make America stronger, better, and more successful. Now, people don't believe that. And more seriously, the people who don't believe it were the ones who used to be supporters of America, the American way of life, American government, the people who enthusiastically voted for Reagan in 1984 now believe that the system is rigged. They believe that they persecute their political opponents. That's a very dangerous situation to be in. And that's why I think Trump is getting this resonance. He starts attacking the state, you know, that they're persecuting me. These are political hacks who are coming after me, and they want to send me to prison. And people say, yeah, that's it. That's who these FBI is. And the problem for Biden is that core support, the blacks, we can get 90 to 95% of the black votes, and get the Hispanics, yeah, we'll get 75% of them, and that's our formula, we will be reelected. That isn't going to work, because Trump is eating into that black vote, because I think many blacks say, yeah, that's what we've been saying all these years.
But what's really interesting, and I'm glad you go back to 1984, George, I think it's a good benchmark. I mean, back in 1984, the Republicans were the party of the rich, the Democrats were the party of the poor. That's very simplistic, but I think it holds water. But Martin, the Republican Party represents the poor, the powerless. and that's the attraction that Trump has for them, is that they have no power, and he has a lot of power. And we can see what they're doing to him. We see an inversion here, and it's not about race; it's about class. At the end of the day, Martin.
But in 1984, though, America had a significant amount of clout around the world, particularly in the Middle East. And to make the comparison today, what I think voters are beginning to recognize more and more. Stupid comment that Biden made just before he was elected about Saudi Arabia being a pariah state, how that is really biting him on the arse now. Because, what's the difference between 84 and now is that the Middle East, particularly countries like Saudi Arabia and Russia together, now control international gas pump prices. And that's really going to hurt Biden. That's really going to hit him very hard because, people will use that as a benchmark. But going back to Trump, though, I mean, we do know who Trump is. He's pretty enigmatic. I mean, he's really in your face. You know how he operates. But I think a lot of people in America are angry at this system, and it's beginning to generate debate and talk on all levels about the system itself. And I think people may well, if we do this same formula again, people may well start lobbying and writing and chatting on social media about it's time that America had perhaps something like the European proportional representation model, because this polarized model, which is
I don't know, Martin. I'm far more pessimistic, George. I mean, if it ever got down to that kind of debate, then the elites will just say we don't need elections anymore. I mean, that's where they will go. They'll say, it's because of the Trumpians and the MAGA. They destroyed democracy, so we'll just coronate Hillary Clinton as queen. There's more likely going that way than changing the system that would actually enfranchise people. 30 seconds, George.
No, I think that's right, because there are all sorts of things may happen in the next 9-10 months maybe even to prevent an election from taking place, you know, extreme circumstances.
It's possible. It's possible.
Yeah. Possible, yeah.
And really, when you think of it, what does Biden really care about? Biden cares about all of these wars and all these interventions. That's what he's been about throughout his career. He doesn't care much about domestic policy. But when it comes to Ukraine, Israel, that's what he cares most passionately about. I think the public senses it. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't care about us. You know, he keeps the border open. You know,
George, he gets his own war, his uniquely own war, Yemen. Okay, so he'll go down in the history books. All right, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Marrakesh and in Budapest, and I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.